702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
Yes TV channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, will Ekurhuleni be placed under administration? The council failed to elect the mayor this week. We'll hear from the COGTA MEC. What happens next in the criminal case against Nosibiwe Mapisa Nkakula? Corruption Watch says Gauteng and KZN have the most corruption reports. And weather, sports, no good things today. But we will talk about Beyonce. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Good to be with you today. Yeah, unfortunately, no good things. I know that you look forward to that on a Friday, but we will be speaking about Cowboy Carter. And that's, of course, Beyonce's new album. We'll bring you a little bit of popular culture, light and shade. You know, we like to bring you a lunchbox here on the Midday Report. Are you a fan? What do you think of this genre adaptation by Beyonce? Send us a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567. Of course, lots of politics to deal with. And we know we're going into election season, we're in election season, and that means coalition governments are going to be inevitable. And when you look at the situation in Ekurhuleni this week, it really does draw into stark relief what the situation is when it comes to coalitions and what is going on there. So there has been this rotating door of mayors in Ekurhuleni. A council meeting was scheduled to elect a new mayor in Ekurhuleni. It was cancelled on Wednesday night. And according to the reports that I'm reading here from News 24, the ANC and the EFF could not agree on the executive council positions. So in other words, there are cracks in the coalition. And you'll remember, of course, that there was a motion of no confidence into the former mayor, Sibuyile Ngodwana, of the AIC, so a minority party. What's happening here is whether or not they put another minority party leader in, or do they put a member of the ANC in? How does this all work? Well, as it stands at the moment, there's no mayor. And what that means is that the council could be placed under administration. This is not ideal for the residents of Ekurhuleni. And if you are one of those residents, I would love to hear from you on this too and what the impact is. But it means that the MEC of Cooperative Governance could have to step in here within the next 7 days. Just before we came on air, I did an interview with the MEC, Mzi Khumalo. Have a listen to what he had to say about the situation in Ekurhuleni, what's going to happen, the issue with coalition governments as well going into the election, and what happens next. MEC, as far as you are concerned, from a COGTA perspective, what is the status of Ekurhuleni? My understanding, of course, is that you have given them 7 days to elect a mayor. Otherwise, there will be action against the council. What exactly is the status there?
If you may recall, the council of Ekurhuleni met, and one of the things that they did was to they debated the motion of no confidence with the consequence of the mayor being removed. And by implication, it means that once you remove the mayor, you cease to have a government in Ekurhuleni, because the mayoral committee goes immediately. So as matters stands in Ekurhuleni, we don't have a government. And as an interim mayor, the city manager, together with the other officials, are the one who are running the show insofar as Ekurhuleni is concerned. That's number one. Number two, then by law, Schedule 3 of the Municipal Structures Act kicks in. And Schedule 3 of the Municipal Act says to us that for once the executive mayor has been removed, for the 7 days, the council should convene a meeting at which the executive mayor must be elected. That was supposed to have happened on Thursday, and that meeting has not taken place. What worries us more is that if you look at the structures act today, it postponement is not one of the elements that a municipality can exercise not to elect the executive mayor. That's point number one. And I've heard many parties there who are saying that they want to challenge the legality of postponement and so on. And it worries us. The second part of it is that that provision foresaw failure to elect. In other words, a council meeting should have been convened, and a failure to elect should have happened in a council meeting, not by way of postponement as such. However, in terms of our textual interpretation, we want to conclude that the municipality of Ekurhuleni has failed for the first 7 days to elect the executive mayor. That's point number one. Point number two, that they have another option. In the next coming 7 days from Thursday last week, they must convene again in order for them to elect the executive mayor. And the law says in case there's a tie there and there is no outright winner, they should convene for the last time and conclude on the election of the executive mayor thereof. What that does to them is that, as I indicated in the morning, it has effectively put them, the words I'm using, as candidates for 139. What do I mean? All that I mean is that the action that provincial government can take resulting from non-election of the executive mayor, it's nothing else but the either we dissolve the municipality partly or you dissolve the municipality in full. So that you then prepare for elections if you've done it in full, or if it's part, then you put in an administrator and then you prepare for elections. Because what we cannot afford is to run an institution without all government or governance structure being in place.
Right. MEC, as I understand it from the reporting around this, is that it is effectively a dispute between the ANC and the EFF that cannot agree on the executive council position. So it really is a tussle over power and politics. Is there a way to resolve this through political channels before it reaches the point of putting the council under administration? Because that's always the last thing that residents would want.
Well, we have set up what we call a dispute resolution mechanism in Gauteng province. We said to the executive mayors and municipal councillors in the province that given that we've got coalition governments, it will appear that there would be a need for us to have this dispute resolution mechanism at which many of these points or conflict points can be resolved. And we've drawn in independent people who must help us to do that. That mechanism is there, it exists, but for one reason or the other, many of these political parties have not, or many of these municipalities have not taken advantage of that. I think that's point number one. And we still insist nothing beats negotiations as such. So we still want to encourage them to do that. However, what worries us is that the second challenge is that given coalition governments, there is no sense of collective accountability and responsibility by a government at the local level. In other words, the mayoral committee under the executive mayor must account as a collective as and when there is a challenge. But what we see is that when there's a challenge, then they look at each other and say, oh, this department is headed by the ANC, or this department is headed by EFF, and therefore we're not going to take a collective responsibility. We are saying that's not how was envisaged by the law. You don't run municipalities, if you like, from a mini-federal state point of view. You don't. Once you're members of mayoral committee, you are all a collective that is accountable to the executive mayor, and therefore you take a joint accountability on any matter as such. So, problem is, I do not think that municipalities are ready for coalition governments. I think coalition government are failing in this regard, and they are going to impact negatively.
But they're inevitable, MEC. We see it across Gauteng, and we're going to see it in other provinces as well. What is the resolution then? Because we need political maturity in order to ensure that residents in Ekurhuleni don't experience this revolving door of mayors.
I agree with you. One of the issues that we put on the table is that we've got to regulate coalition governments. And up until such time that as a country we've regulated coalition governments, we're going to face up a big problem. Because now, as matter stands, these things are now being driven by political parties more than, and you've said, you've made a point that the ANC and the EFF. And our assessment is that the problem started right from the beginning. If you remember how the current mayor committee was put in place, you will recall that there was a problem. Five MMCs from the EFF were appointed first, and there was a whole lot of challenges jangling around before the other MMCs were brought in place. That was the beginning of a conflict that today we are in it. So that's the other problem is that part of regulation, of course, might be to look at some of the current systems we have within the law, the collective mayoral system, which indicates how parties can be represented on the basis of what their performance was. In other words, what they got from the voters. For me, that would work because you can't have this situation where we're having. For instance, the executive mayor was removed by 47 votes, which 47 votes will never constitute a government in Ekurhuleni, given that the Ekurhuleni has got 224 councillors, and for majority you need about 113 councillors to constitute a majority. So those 47 people, they simply plunged the municipal council into a crisis.
Very briefly, MEC, so just clarity on the 7 days, because you were counting back from Thursday last week. So how many days do they have now, bearing in mind, of course, there's also a legal application taking place? At what stage could we see Ekurhuleni placed under administration?
I'm counting from Thursday. I'm not counting back because
Thursday, yesterday.
They have failed. Yeah, they have failed in the first instance to elect the executive mayor. Whether they say we postpone or not, my interpretation contextually is that you have failed, as emphasized by law, to appoint an executive mayor in your first 7 days. My encouragement to them is that to avoid this action that we could take, you've got another 7 days to convene a council meeting and elect the executive mayor. Please do that so that we don't get into trouble.
MEC, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you making time to speak to us today.
Thank you very much.
Gauteng COGTA MEC Mzi Kumalo speaking to us there about the situation in Ekurhuleni. And that's the reality that we are dealing with when it comes to coalition governments and how ineffectual they actually are. Lots of reaction coming through already about the situation. In Germiston, as an example here, when there are no political heads of department, officials do as they please. They do as they please, even if they are political heads. But this period, they are extreme. And then also a comment here about how there is, in Germiston, we've had a total electricity blackout since Tuesday morning. No update, nothing. Head of Energy gets no response from anyone. And that's from Peter in Darkest Germiston. What are your thoughts on that situation in Ekurhuleni? Obviously, you never want a situation where residents are affected in the way they are by the city being put under administration. But it looks like that is a very likely outcome here.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Listen, I asked you what you thought about Beyonce's new album because we're going to be speaking about it a bit later on. And it seems people are quite divided, as you would expect. Mama Putle saying, "Hi, Mandy, Cowboy Carter is absolutely fire. I think it's certainly a testament to how innovative Beyonce has grown to be over the years. I think we've had so many vocal greats over the years, but very few have mastered their vocal prowess across different genres in the way that Beyonce has and in such an experimental and enriching way." And then Kia Metwe says, "I love country music. I can listen to Chris Stapleton and Toby Keith on repeat every day. But what Bey is doing is an injustice to the genre. She's ruining it. She must stick to what she knows and leave country alone." What are your thoughts on Cowboy Carter?
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Well, back to some serious news now. The ANC is having a press conference at the moment, a briefing on priority 6 of its manifesto. If you've read the manifesto, you'll know that priority 6 outlines how the ANC aims to build a better Africa and the world by supporting development and peace efforts on our continent and worldwide. Minister of International Relations, Naledi Pandor, is leading that briefing. Let's have a listen in.
Important role in framing in the course of the struggle against apartheid. And it continues to be an extremely important concept even today. We will continue with our adopted mission of building a world devoid of war, of famine, of disease, of military coups, of foreign occupation and exploitation. I know when I speak of famine, Comrade Mahlengi, that our colleagues in the media won't recall that I said that if the borders of Israel were to be opened to the flow of humanitarian aid, it would be the powerful friends of Israel that would give effect to that. So how pleased we are that after America indicated that the borders should be opened and more aid should flow, that Israel has indicated borders will be opened. We had said the powerful will be the ones that influence Israel. So it gives life to this very notion of peace, of ending famine and conflict. Our vision is that of a new global order based on collaboration and partnership. We've also committed ourselves to building a community of nations which prioritizes dialogue to resolve conflict. I want to pause here for a moment and just speak of this collaboration and partnership. Many people ask South Africa, why do you say you're non-aligned? And you would know that the alignment that is sought is alignment with the most powerful countries. It would be an alignment that says whatever they desire, you as South Africa have to follow it. That is why we are not aligned to any powerful entity and do not, as practice, because country A says this, we follow blindly. Because country B says this, we follow blindly. So this is how I would set out our belief that we cannot be attached to particular powerful countries just to be a mouthpiece when we have our own notions of how we see global affairs. Our organization, the African National Congress, fully supports our government's efforts at trying to silence the guns on the African continent. Our country played a key role in bringing about the Ethiopia-TPLF Tigray Peace Agreement, commonly called the Pretoria Agreement, which was signed on the 2nd of November 2022, right here in our country, South Africa. And I was an observer in that process, and I saw the role that South Africans played.
Minister of International Relations, Naledi Pandor, leading that briefing on behalf of the ANC on priority 6 of its manifesto outlining international relations, foreign affairs, relationships in Africa, the world, Middle East as well.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
The former Speaker of the National Assembly, Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula, yesterday being granted bail of 50,000 rand in court. And she, of course, has now been charged with multiple counts of corruption. It's alleged that she received bribes totaling 2.5 million rand during her tenure as the Defence Minister. So what happens next? A 46-page bail application was read out yesterday in which she said that she ain't going to prison. The irony here should not be lost on you, because in that affidavit, she complained at length about the fact that prison was not for her and that it was dangerous and not safe. Yet she was the Minister of Correctional Services for several years. So there should be no irony lost there. Well, let's find out what happens next. And Ntabiseng Dubuzane is the Director of Dubuzane Attorneys. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report. Thank you very much for your time. So we have a court appearance, a release on bail as well. And Ntabiseng, what happens next?
Good afternoon and thank you for having me. So now we wait for the alleged second accused person to be added to this matter. And then if indeed the investigations on the NPA side have been concluded, the matter will then be remanded for disclosure or copies of the docket, of course, after the second accused person has also applied for his or her bail. And then thereafter, you know, we'll do the normal process, a pre-trial conference and preparing for trial. But if investigations are not yet complete, the matter will be postponed for further investigations.
In this instance, we know remarkably quite a lot about the state's case against the accused because of this application we had last week trying to stop the arrest from taking place. So Nosiviwe Mapisa Nkakula's lawyers have cast doubt on the strength of the case. How crucial is it here? Because we know from experience, right, that there's a Section 204 witness is somebody who's implicated. You need corroborating evidence. You need circumstantial evidence. What does the NPA need?
Well, at this stage, we may know something, but we don't know much, actually, when it comes to the state's case, because the state is only allowing us to know what they want us to know. They're not at liberty right now to inform anybody, including the defense attorneys, what they have in their arsenal. So this 204 witness was an accused person before. That's how a Section 204 witness comes into play. It means they know intricate details about the crime that was committed in exchange for either a lighter sentence or charges being withdrawn completely against this person. Then they become a state witness or Section 204, I beg your pardon, witness. So at this stage, we really don't know a lot of what is happening. At the pre-trial day, should it be recorded and put on air, only then would we have an idea of what it is that is in common cause with both parties and what it is that is in dispute. And then we'll be able to have a little bit of an idea of what's happening. But until the state makes the decision to disclose the entire docket, we only know what they want us to know.
Quite a lot was said in court yesterday about whether or not the accused would be able to go to prison. She's arguing through her lawyers that it should be, hypothetically, of course, if she's convicted, it should be a non-custodial sentence. On a charge like these, 12 charges of corruption, what could the sentence be all the way down the line when we finally get, if we finally get to that point?
Should we get to that point, looking at the amounts that we're looking at, we're not looking at anything less than 10 years. It is too much money for there to be a non-custodial sentence. The mitigating factors would really have to be strong in order for her to not be in custody. But I feel like the defense attorneys are jumping the gun. We're not even anywhere near for them to be discussing imprisonment or anything of the sort. In fact, yesterday's bail application, according to me, and with experience within criminal court, was unnecessary. The state was unopposed bail. All they had to do was hand in the affidavit and then we move on with life.
We actually had a question into the show yesterday about this, about if the state wasn't opposing bail, why did we have that whole story with the 46-page
exactly.
affidavit? What was the point of it? Was it strategy?
I feel like maybe there was a need for the defense side to try and paint a picture of their client, which really wasn't necessary. The normal practice is that if state is not opposed to bail, yes, the affidavit is drafted, but there's no need to read the record in the affidavit into the record, nor does the state have to read theirs into record. We just submit the affidavit, the court peruses it, grants bail, and we move. It's less than 10 minutes appearance, but yesterday was just dramatic.
Tubby saying thank you so much. What do you expect from a criminal trial in this country? And Tubby saying Dubuzana, director of Dubuzana Attorneys, giving us some analysis there. It really was quite dramatic. But, you know, I think that sometimes these things are necessary.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Good day, Mandy. Listening to the Minister of International Relations, I think sometimes you have to keep quiet or say nothing, because this is the minister who is calling Russia's invasion to Ukraine as a war, which is not even a war. It's an invasion. But we failed to call it an invasion. We just called it a war, whereas there wasn't even a war. It's not even a war. It won't be a war. Thanks, David.
Hi, Mandy. You know, these ANC people who wants to fix the world, they can hardly fix the pothole, but they want to fix the whole world. Please, man, please.
Thank you very much for those comments, reacting there to the ANC's press conference currently underway. Minister Naledi Pandor, the Minister of International Relations in this capacity, though, speaking on behalf of the ANC about international relations and policies regarding the world. And if there's one thing about South Africa's international relations policy, is that it is confusing.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
So which province do you think has the most complaints about corruption? I know the answer, right? So I would guess it would be Gauteng, because it is the economic hub, which would make sense. That's followed closely by KZN and then the Free State and then the Western Cape. Corruption Watch has a report out which takes a look at this. Malusi Kala from Corruption Watch joining us to unpack this. Malusi, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. This report, the 12th Annual Corruption Watch report, breaks down the numbers in terms of, we'll start with provinces and what it tells us. Which provinces are the more corrupt than the others, I suppose?
Hi, Mandy. This is our annual report. And naturally, with our annual report, because we're an organization that receives whistleblower accounts, we then highlight our data analysis just to show the public at large that these are some of the most reported corruption types. So it's not necessarily to say that these provinces are the most corrupt, but it's definitely the ones that we have received the most whistleblower reports from during 2023. And in that year, we received about 2,100 reports of corruption, just a little bit more than that. And as you've highlighted, it's Gauteng, KZN, Free State, and Western Cape. And 70% or so from those come from city of Tswane, city of Johannesburg, and the city of Cape Town, and one or two other municipalities. And yeah, the issues are wide-ranging, just to make the point quickly.
Mining, policing, business, basic education sectors accounted for the highest corruption complaints. Talk us through that.
Yeah, so in all of these areas that you've just listed, we find that maladministration is a problem, bribery and extortion, procurement irregularities, there's some fraud cases as well, and just abuse of authority. This is, of course, within our definition of corruption, which is the abuse of entrusted power by anyone for personal or private gain. And so these are the areas that we find that, you know, officials have been acting improperly, in cahoots often with private individuals or private companies.
And in terms of your findings around state capture, the Zondo report, effective measures to root out corruption, you obviously mentioned a lot of whistleblower complaints. We're still waiting for whistleblower legislation to come into effect. What are you finding in terms of progress there in your report?
This is an area that we continuously work on. The Department of Justice and Correctional Services had released a paper, a discussion paper, which is deviates from the normal practice of having a white paper on whistleblowing mechanisms within the country, as well as just looking at it in terms comparing it to other whistleblowing platforms and legislation and elsewhere in the world. This is work that we've also done. And what's now left to do, and I assume it's not going to happen under this administration, is that within the next administration, what we need to lobby hard for is to ensure that legislation in terms of the PDA, the Protective Disclosures Act, needs to change, because we need to look at making the whistleblowing environment safer for whistleblowers, but we also need to look at the definition of how a whistleblower is viewed in law. It just cannot be a relationship between an employee and an employer.
We have been banging this drum for years, Malusi. Thank you very much. Malusi Kala is the Acting Lead Coordinator for Stakeholder Relations and Campaigns at Corruption Watch, speaking there about the 12th Annual Corruption Watch Report. And as explained, that's the breakdown of corruption and where it's coming from. But of course you need whistleblowers to come forward and tell you about this. And we're still waiting for that whistleblower legislation to come into effect. It's not going to happen in this administration, but it needs to happen quickly if we are going to win the fight against corruption.
702.
to
Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Well, that's, of course, because this administration's time is nearing its end. We go to the polls at the end of May, and Home Affairs is now saying that its offices will be open on Saturdays for 5 hours from the Saturday to May the 25th for ID collection services and facilitation of new applications, issuing of temporary ID certificates, so you can all go out and vote. See ya. Orsa, Department Spokesperson for Home Affairs, joining us. Sia, good afternoon to you. Tell us about the hours for Home Affairs. What are you doing until election date?
Okay, good afternoon, Mandy, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Yes, indeed, we are opening our offices from tomorrow on Saturdays. We are opening at 8 o'clock until 1. That is the plan as we speak. But if we do see increased volumes or demand for services to be going beyond the 1 o'clock, then we will consider that for future weekends. But for tomorrow, we are only looking at opening between 8 and 3 o'clock. Subject to performance and the response, then we will consider if we need to make those operating hours.
Do we need appointments? And what do we need appointments for, and how do we do that?
Well, South Africans on any given day have got two options of how they can come to the office. They can make an appointment if they want to, or they can just come to the office. No one should be returned or denied accessing our services because they don't have an appointment. If you do want to make an appointment, please do so by accessing our website. It's at www.dha.gov.za. We've got a link to the branch appointment booking system, or BABS, which is BABS. You can use that to indicate. The difference is that if you use that platform, you can then choose the time that you want to be served, and depending on the availability, you'll then only come at the time that you have chosen. So you don't have to go into stand in the queues in our offices when you arrive.
Sia, thank you for explaining all of that. Sia Corsa is the department spokesperson for Home Affairs. Offices will be open on Saturdays for 5 hours from April the 6th, which is tomorrow, to May the 25th for ID collection services. So you can go and get a new ID. You can go and get a temporary ID if necessary so you can vote in the elections.
And now it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 7:02.
Let's walk the talk.
12:46 on the Midday Report. I have a tiny bit of good news for you. According to Eskom, load shedding will remain suspended until further notice following 9 consecutive days of non-implementation. And this decision is a result of sustained available generation capacity and adequate emergency reserves. Eskom will provide a system update on Sunday afternoon or communicate any significant changes should they occur. So no load shedding this weekend, but the weather service is warning us of cold temperatures, and you know what happens when there's cold temperatures? There's widespread rainfall, possible flooding, so who knows? Elizabeth Fullion, the weather forecaster, has sent us a voice note. Have a listen.
This is Elizabeth Fullion, a chief forecaster at the South African Weather Service. We've recently been experiencing hot and dry weather over most parts of the country, but just this week, temperatures have started to cool down, with thundershowers also being experienced. This weekend, we are expecting to be impacted by a rather large weather system, and that's called a cut-off low pressure. This is going to result in widespread showers over the central and eastern parts of the country later today, as well as tomorrow, where there is a possibility of a few of these thunderstorms becoming severe, especially tomorrow. By Sunday, the system will intensify more, affecting most parts of the country. And Monday, what we call as the scorpion's tail, is expected to affect the Cape South Coast. We at the South African Weather Service will continue to closely monitor the situation and issue all the necessary warnings. At this stage, we've got numerous warnings that are currently in effect, mainly for wind and disruptive rainfall over the western and southern parts of the country. Temperature-wise, in Johannesburg today, we're expecting a high of 25, as well as tomorrow. By Sunday, temperatures are going to drop quite a bit, only reaching a high of 22 on Sunday, and Monday, 21 degrees. In the Cape, it's going to remain cool, with a high of 19 today, 22 tomorrow, Sunday, 20, and down to 18 on Monday.
That's Elizabeth Fullion, the SA Weather Service forecaster, letting us know what we can expect this weekend.
Sports Wrap.
Sports Wrap.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
Anthony Tashada, EWN sports reporter, joining us in studio. There's a lot going on, Anthony. The Blitzbocker we're playing this morning, Banyana, the Japanese Grand Prix. I was watching free practice earlier, Sundowns. Let's start with the Blitzbox in the sevens. How are we doing there?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a change of fortunes for either side, as the Blitzbocker managing to secure qualification for the next round despite the fact that they still have one game to play. Beating Ireland and Spain was pretty impressive. For the South African women, really not as great. It was a tough group. They, of course, had Ireland, Fiji and the Australians. They lost to both the Irish and the Fijians this morning. And now they have to take on the log leaders tomorrow morning. So it is just looking like it's not going to be great for us. The chances of getting to that quarterfinal like they wanted, it slipped away.
So speaking of South African women, Banyana playing Nigeria in the first leg of the Olympic qualifiers.
Yeah, honestly, I think you have to raise questions as to why it is that the two best African women's teams are facing off in one of the finals. Why is it that they're not each in their own final and we could potentially be getting the best African sides out at the Olympics? But it is going to be a tough one. It's sort of the current stars in the form of Banyana. You know, they've sort of been raising the African pride, just taking it overseas with the way that they've played, what they've won so far. And then it's the historically big team, the Falcons. And so facing off in Nigeria for the first leg is going to be tough. It's going to be hard, but it does mean that when they do come back, they're of course going to be having the chance to redeem the fact that they missed out 4 years ago for the Tokyo Games.
Yeah. And then lots of football. There's a Champions Challenge Cup quarterfinal weekend. Manchester United versus Liverpool, of course, Premier League.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting, isn't it? Hopefully United can lose again in the last moments. And then in terms of Mamelodi Sundowns, goalless draw the last time out in the CAF Champions League quarterfinal first leg against the Tanzanian champions, Young Africans. And so hopefully at home, they're going to be showing exactly why they should be taken as heavy hitters on the continent as they kick off this evening at 8 p.m.
Lots of sport to look forward to, the Japanese Grand Prix as well. Anthony, thank you so much for wrapping up all of the sport we can expect this weekend.
Always a pleasure.
Good things.
Good things.
With Brent Lindekey.
I know I told you that we didn't have Brent Lindekey today because he was off cruising around Europe, but he surprised us all and he sent us a WhatsApp voice note. Have a listen.
Hey, what's happening, 702 and Cape Talk family? If you've been following me on social media, then you'll know that I'm not in studio this week, but that doesn't mean that the good things stop. So I'm back for another Feel Good Friday with more good things stories for you. First up, a little town in the Karoo has had a very big mention in the Wall Street Journal. Mary Holland's feature in the Wall Street Journal celebrates Prince Albert in the Karoo as a captivating destination in South Africa. Situated in the arid landscapes of the Karoo Desert, this historic farming town has transformed into a vibrant center for creativity, artisan crafts and gastronomic experiences. Known as the Jewel of the Karoo, Prince Albert offers breathtaking views of the Swartberg Mountains and provides a peaceful retreat amidst nature. The town has gained renown for its high quality craftsmanship, artisanal products, and local delicacies. Holland's article, potentially reaching 3.5 million readers, could boost global interest in Prince Albert, encouraging travelers to explore its unique offerings and understand why it has earned its reputation as one of South Africa's coolest destinations. Next up, Priscilla Fick, a photographer from Mossel Bay, known as the Happy Snapper, discovered the widespread joy her photos is bringing to others. Initially taking snaps on her phone of things that resonated with her, Priscilla's hobby evolved into a talent that might enable her to travel the world while spreading this happiness. Using the Guru Shots app, she participated in various photography challenges, including an exhibition challenge requiring a minimum of 4,900 votes for eligibility. Despite the anonymous voting system and the inability to directly solicit votes, Priscilla's photos garnered enough support for digital exhibitions in Johannesburg, Mexico, Chicago, and Cyprus. The unexpected success has propelled her photography into the spotlight, marking her as a force to be reckoned with in the world of photography, and just a really good news story. In the picturesque Wild Coast, Warren and Nolizwi Hudson manage Cool Bananas, a spaza shop and homestay accommodation in Shani Village, and they've recently gone viral. You see, recently they experienced an unexpected event when a scheduled delivery from Takealot arrived. The delivery driver, despite mistakenly reaching one village across the river, went to extraordinary lengths to deliver the parcel. He jogged to the river, hitchhiked a kayak ride, and ran along the beach to reach the Hudsons, drenched and exhausted. Warren praised the driver's dedication, emphasizing his commendable service, and thanked him greatly. The delivery man declined any publicity, but was acknowledged on social media, where the story gained viral attention, highlighting the importance of exceptional customer service and acts of kindness. That's it. You can catch these stories and many, many more on goodthingsguy.com. Happy Friday. Until next week, as I always say, wishing you only good things.
Only good things. Brent Lindekoe, the Good Things Guy. He's cruising around Europe, but he made time to send us a WhatsApp voice note.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
So throughout the show, I've been asking you what you think about Beyonce's new album, Cowboy Carter, because I'm a little bit obsessed with it. I think it's amazing. But it's mixed reactions. So I'm asking Kamagwini Mavovano, who's the executive producer of the show, to pop in just to give us a sense of what is the kind of response we've seen from this album, but also what is Beyonce thinking here?
Mandy, you know, Beyonce said that she's only going to release bodies of work that are impactful and that mean something. So with Break My Soul, you had a trend-setting album that spoke for communities that have been left out, the LGBT community. With this particular body of work, she has, it's a reclamation project, let's call it that, where she said, our history as Black people, as African Americans, especially as cowboys, will not be forgotten. And in this particular body of work, she tells a whole story where she reclaims that whole entire history. And it's beautiful to see, actually.
And what's the response been like? Because our listeners are divided.
The response has been, it's been good, Mandy, but there are some people who feel like this particular culture belongs to a certain group of people. So we've seen a certain group of people saying that this narrative does not belong to you, but this is why this album is important. This is why she had to tell the story. She even recounts how one in four Black people, well, one in four people were actually cowboys back in the 1800s. She tells us this whole entire history. So a lot of people have really been so receptive to it. A lot of people have also been saying, standing up for Beyonce more than anything. But I think that more racist people have just kind of, you know, not been receptive to it because they want to own the narrative of the cowboy culture in America.
So I've chosen Levi Jeans with Post Malone.
Yeah, there's a whole history behind that as well, because back in the day, Beyonce said that back in the day, Levi Jeans was the only organization that would actually dress some of the Black musicians. So yeah, KG, let's play it.
Beyonce, Levi Jeans off Cowboy Carter with Post Malone. I hope you have a lovely weekend. It's 1 o'clock.